Today is January 12th, 2020. This is Movie Podcast 313. I'm Todd Agassord, my good friend John Westfall. And today we're going to talk about a couple of things that came out at CES and a couple of things that came out a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But, I also want to thank our buddies, Sven Johansson and Don Sorsonelli, for joining us last week. Always a lot of fun. We got to have them on more often, as well as some other friends who were unable to join us. But anyway, thanks to those two. All right, John, here we go. Second podcast of 2020.
Well, we'll hopefully make it as interesting as the first, but we make no promises.
Yeah. So did you pay attention at all to CES? I did not. I didn't pay attention until I decided we needed a topic for today.
I did my usual pay attention to what our friends are talking about. Ah. So, you know, what people on Facebook and Twitter are saying that we know, and that usually gives me what is the high points, but, you know, it seems like each year CES is just a little bit less interesting than the previous years.
Yeah.
I don't think companies feel so much like they have to wait on announcements. In fact, I think they feel if they wait, then someone else will just announce something before they can announce it and steal their thunder. So yeah. I think less and less we're seeing companies all agreeing, well, we'll hold off until CES when they can just put out a press release and own the day or own the couple of days between that and another competitor releasing something.
Well, you know, the two problems I have with CES, and I should note that after Comdex died in, 2000, 2001, I really wanted to go to CES in the last 20 years and never did, but now I don't. And the two reasons are, A, it seems like the small companies who could make use of this opportunity to make a splash don't. And B, well, I guess three things. And two, instead of B, one and B. And two, it seems like a lot of things announced never actually get released, so I don't care. Or, you know, I care and then I get disappointed when they're never released. And three, things are just getting weirder and weirder. Like, did you see the headless cat?
Yeah, robot. I did see that, and yeah. I don't know what to make of that.
Other than it's creepy. Like, okay, so yeah. it's meant to be like a care device, right, for people who may be elderly or unable to get about and not have people around them. But really, you know, like, would you, like, want to give your loved one a headless cat and say, here you go. This will make you feel better. I don't think so.
You don't think that would make someone feel so much better, a headless cat?
No, I don't. You know what? Or you could, maybe they should have just called it a tribble with a tail. Maybe that would have been better. You know, it's a giant tribble, right, with a tail. There was that Tombot Jenny, which is a golden retriever puppy robot, which was actually pretty good looking, though. But anyway. And so, anyway, those are the kinds of things that upset me, like, you know, the headless cat. And I'm not even sure that the golden retriever, which did look pretty good, is actually something you can buy in the near future. And we'll get to that a little later in one of the things I found. So the first thing I noticed, and a bunch of people wrote about it, it seemed very interesting, is Lenovo's IdeaPad Duet Chromebook, which is not available yet. But the thing that's interesting about it is it's a tablet with a detachable keyboard, comes with a keyboard, and it's $279. So, you know, price is amazing. Google's own tablet, the Pixel tablet, was kind of a failure last year. So it's good that, mostly because they're so darn expensive. So it's good that the other manufacturers have picked up, at least on the idea, saying, well, maybe we could do this at a price real people could afford. And $279 with the keyboard is, I think, very affordable. It's a 10.1-inch device. It's not running on Intel, of course. It's running, you know, some ARM processor from a company I never heard of. But I think I'm going to buy one. At $279, I think it's worth, you know, spending a few dollars to try it out. Might replace my current Lenovo Chromebook that I'm using in the office. It's kind of my unofficial roaming around thing because my real notebook's too heavy and big to carry around. So, any interest in a $279 Chromebook?
You know, I look at Chromebooks, and I just don't know if I could live in that ecosystem. I have I have too many apps that I still use that are not web-based. So now I say that after having all morning basically spent working on an app on the web, or Microsoft Flow that I'll talk about later. But okay. Still, it seems like I don't think I would be as happy with a Chromebook as a MacBook or a Windows PC.
Okay.
Maybe I'm just getting grumpy and old.
I will. I'm already past that point, being grumpy and old. but I think I will spend the last years of my life trying to convince you to try a Chromebook.
Well, now that I know that is your goal, this is, you know, if I don't do it, will that just keep you going longer and longer?
Or I may die, you know, with like, oh God, I just failed at that one, you know, life's little failures. But anyway, I find it interesting, and also mostly because it's a tablet, because, you know, the Android tablet market just died, right? I mean, there still are Android tablets. You go to Costco or Sam's Club and you can see some, but really, nobody carries them, right? I mean, who are buying these things? I don't know. I'm guessing maybe some kind of vertical applications. But most places I go with verticals, I see with little iPads in either kiosk system or, you know, carried around by service people to provide, you know, point of sale or whatever. But yeah.
Well, I will tell you, I have a very vertical application for the one Android tablet I have here, and that is I have a tablet from, I guess, 2010 or so, the original Samsung Tab.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been a great little picture frame for me for about 6 years now. So, you know, it's working. It's just not all that... I guess amazing.
Yeah.
It just is what it is. But it's kind of funny to me that is a vertical niche market, a picture frame picture in my frame. Living room.
You know, it's funny because the Galaxy Tab 8, that's the one you have, right? I'm going to guess. Or something like it. Or 7 or 8, whatever.
No, it didn't even have a number.
Oh.
It was the original Galaxy Tab.
Oh, is it the big one? Is it like a 10 inch?
Or no, it's a 7 inch. It was so before they started adding numbers, when it was just a carrier based item,
yeah,
it's the original Samsung Galaxy Tab.
I think I have that same model too, and I bought it because there was no iPad mini yet when it came out.
Yeah.
And my iPad was just too big to carry, or at least that was my impression, or my opinion, I should say, not impression. And I just didn't want to carry a full-size iPad, so when the Galaxy Tab came out, it was, I think, like a 7 or 8 inch diagonal screen, and it was just a perfect size. It's basically iPad mini size.
Yep, and that's exactly why I bought it. I had an original iPad at the time, and when I saw this, I thought that's great because I was commuting on the train quite a bit, and it was much easier to use this than to use an iPad.
Which was heavy back then.
Yes.
Relative to today's full-size iPads. You're fortunate because my Galaxy Tab stopped booting years ago.
Yeah, I don't know why mine keeps working, but I'm happy about it. So.
So it stopped. Yeah, it just stopped booting up one day, and he said, oh well, I got years of use out of it, and, you know, I'm not going to be too disappointed. It's not like I didn't get any use out of it. Okay, next up is here's another Chromebook that you don't care about. several blogs, or whatever you want to call them, publications, chose the Samsung Galaxy Chromebook as their laptop or product of the year or whatever, or product of the show, CES product. So it's like $1,000 Chromebook, and it sounds great, but again, can't afford it. Just found it interesting that in this case Wired chose the Samsung Galaxy Chromebook as their best laptop choice at CES. Mm-hmm. Not going to buy that one. Just a point of interest. Too expensive. Here's another one. It's too expensive. The Verge. Their best in show, so not best laptop, but best in show, was is a $2,500 Lenovo ThinkPad X1 Fold. And the big deal about it is that the screen folds. So, you know, you'd say, well, all laptops fold at the hinge, but this one has a folding screen, so it becomes presumably a smaller device to carry around. But I don't know, would you buy a first generation folding screen device? Especially at $2,500, I'm not.
Yeah, that's the one that I'm really interested in because we've been hearing about foldable displays for so long, but yet we haven't seen anything practical.
Right.
I don't think 20 $500 is practical.
No.
I don't think anyone should be buying it for that much. But if it works, I really like the idea of foldable displays. You know, going back to when, you know, almost 10 years ago now, when the original iPad came out, it's scary to think about it, but I had an original iPad. And I had it in my closet for 4 months because I couldn't quite figure out what to do with it. And part of that was because it had a very heavy, you know, relatively heavy screen.
Yeah.
And heavy, you know, construction. And I just didn't want to deal with carrying it around. And if it had been foldable, you know, like many things, I probably would have been less annoyed because it wouldn't have had a smaller footprint in my bag or in my coat or wherever it was. So I love the idea of foldable displays, especially for travel. You know, I really like, I started printing my conference posters on fabric because that folds. You know, there are good things about.
Wait, let's stop there. You're doing what? You're printing your conference posters on what?
On fabric.
How do you do that?
So there is a company called Spoonflower.com. They do custom printed fabrics, yeah. And they have created a little niche market for themselves in printing posters for academics. And they are very nice. They cost a little bit less than getting your poster printed through, you know, a web service or going to Office Depot or wherever you're going to go, Office Max, Staples, whatever. So they're cheaper and they can fold. So you can just throw it in your bag and take it to your conference and tack it up. And then when people come over, not only are they asking about what you're doing, they're also very interested in your poster.
as a material.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Now I have more questions. So when you look at the poster, does it have a texture to it, or is it so fine that it's like you can't tell the difference until you get close? Or even if
you can tell it's a little bit different, but you can't really tell why until you get close enough to look at it.
Right.
So it's very clean, easy to read, all of that, and then once you get up to it and you touch it, then people go, "Oh, that's fabric. That's why it looked so."
Yeah.
Different.
Now, John, for the fives of listeners who may not know that you're a professor of psychology and an academic, could you please explain what an academic poster is, lest they think you're entering like seventh grade science fairs?
So there are presentations that are made at conferences that are in person. So people actually go and listen to someone talk for 20 minutes or so. And then there are, for all the people who do not get there enough time in the conference to give their presentation, there are poster sessions where professors and grad students will stand next to a poster. Of course, if you're tenured, you don't stand there. You just tack up your poster and leave. But this is a way for people to see what's going on by just kind of walking through. So, you know, it might be a 2-hour session and your poster's up, but maybe you take a walk and see what other people are doing. So it's kind of a browse as you like data buffet.
Right. Versus a talk in front with a PowerPoint seminar.
Yes. Although I have seen people who have turned their poster presentation into a seminar by simply putting a portable projector up, which I sort of think is kind of fun and unique. But
yeah.
But that's an academic poster session. Okay. So anyway, if I had a screen that could fold,
thinking about this fabric poster. Anyway, go ahead.
If I had a screen that could fold, I think I would enjoy being able to
Uh-oh, folks. Okay, so as we speak, we have had a little bit of a glitch. I'm still running, so I think we've got a little bit of a broadband issue. We have storms in our area, so I'm going to wait for John to either reappear, or what I'm going to do is hang up. Okay, we're back. I, on my end, way over here in Hawaii in the middle of the ocean, had a cable broadband problem, but we're back. Mm-hmm. And when we left off, John was talking about why he's so interested in having a folding notebook.
Yeah, a folding screen of any kind, just because it takes up less space. And I'm the kind of person that I love taking up less space. In fact, over the only good thing about winter, or what we get and we call winter here, is that I can wear a Scotty vest and keep all my stuff for the day in that and not have to carry a bag.
See, we don't even get cold enough here for me to... I have some Scotty vest jackets and so forth, with, you know, 17 pockets or whatever, but I never get a chance to wear them in Hawaii because it's never cool enough.
And it's just sad.
Yeah, it is sad. It is sad. I wouldn't mind a couple of cool days. I should note that, you know, it does get cooler in higher elevations. Like if in your mountains of the Big Island of Hawaii near Volcano National Park, it'll get down into the 40s and 50s in the winter. But here it's near sea level where I am. I'm probably, if I'm going to guess, about 30, 40 feet above sea level. Oh, man. The coldest it gets is like the high 60s. And yet, and I will make fun of my fellow citizens here. And yet, when it's like 75 degrees, you see people with like parkas on. I get a heat stroke just looking at them. You know? Like, how can you not get a heat stroke dressed like that in that kind of weather? But okay, that aside, I'm sure I've offended a whole bunch of people now. But that aside, yeah, I agree with you. Okay, so what is the price point you would consider at? I think under 1,000 for me, 500 for sure.
Under 1,000, I would probably buy it just to play with it. If it had good reviews, yep, people were saying, hey, this thing actually works, yep, I would get it just to play with it.
And how long would you wait? Like, I would wait like 6 months to see if anybody reports a cracked screen or something.
Yeah, probably around 3 to 4 months. I'd go with initial reviews. I would think if it's going to crack, it's going to crack, yeah, within a couple of days of reviewing it. Because I would assume most reviewers, the first time they get a foldable screen, they're going to have a lot of fun putting it in various places where it shouldn't be, just to see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't know if anybody else announced these folding screens. I'm kind of looking right now. Oh, I guess Dell has a foldable PC. Oh, but it has a hinge. Does it have a hinge? Okay, so PC Magazine has something. No? Well, it does have a hinge. I don't know if you could hear that, John. But probably
yes.
Could you hear that, the YouTube thing?
No, but I heard you say that it has a hinge.
Yeah, so I'm looking at a YouTube video. In fact, I'll grab this thing and I'll stick it in our show notes. And it does have a hinge, although when it's unfolded, it looks like it doesn't have a hinge. It's pretty remarkable, actually. I wonder what it costs. And it's called a Dell Ori, O-R-I, like origami, maybe? Dell Ori foldable screen laptop. PC Magazine has a YouTube video. Don't know how much it costs. But you know, like other things, I'm hoping these prices will come down very soon. For the Google Pixel Slate was started at about $600-$700 when it came out last year. The high end was well over 1,000. And now the Lenovo IdeaPad, what is it called? IdeaPad Duet Chromebook is under 300, right? A year later, essentially. A little over a year later. So I'm hoping we'll see this with the folding screen stuff. And in sometime in 2021, 2022, we'll be able to purchase a folding device for under 1,000. Well under 1,000.
I will say that we have also been waiting for this for 10 years, so I'm not going to hold my breath.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Yeah, we had to wait for stuff for a long, like tablets. Remember the tablet PC in 2001? And we really didn't have a functional tablet until Apple introduced the iPad in 2010, 9 years later. So, anyway. Now, again, another announcement that came out of CES that I found interesting, but then the CNET article, I think, is a little misleading. And so, basically, they're talking about blood pressure sensors in earbuds from a company called... Let me see this now. From a company called... What? Valencell. V-A-L-E-N-C-E-L-L. Valencell. And the headline says, you know, blood pressure sensing earbuds are coming in 2020. Valencell's tech is ready for heart rate sensing earbuds coming this year. Now, I went to the website, and as far as I can figure, Valencell does not make or sell these earbuds. What they do is they provide the technology to get blood pressure sensors in an earbud made by other manufacturers. So, you know, some other manufacturer like Apple or whoever is going to have to go buy the technology or license the technology and then integrate it and develop software or use Valencell's presumably they have some kind of template software to get you started. But I still think it's a really cool idea. The demo model they show looks like a hearing aid more than anything else, with an over-the-ear battery pack, I assume, and an earbud. So it's going to be a little bit ungainly. Let me rephrase that. The prototype looks a little ungainly, but not too bad. I mean, it looks like basically a more or less modern hearing aid if you've seen those in the recent past. I'm really fascinated by these biometric devices and things like we have blood pressure cuffs that are Bluetooth enabled and all that, but we don't have anything that constantly monitors your blood pressure, which I think would be a fascinating metric for someone to have, especially as we get older.
Yeah, and I also think it'll be interesting because we'll learn more about what our biometrics do on a regular basis. And anything that I think teaches us, that you should expect your blood pressure to do this throughout the day, change this way, do this and that, I think that's a good thing, just to know what your body does.
Yeah. And it'd be interesting to, finally get some real world data on the white coat syndrome, or, you go to your doctor's office and you're already a little anxious, so your heart rate's a little elevated and your blood pressure's a little elevated, and it's probably not a true measure of those aspects of your biometry or whatever you call it. But
yeah, very true.
Yeah. So I'm hoping to see that stuff in affordable mainstream devices in the next year or two. But I don't think we're going to see it now. Unless of course, it's already been licensed and CNET didn't say or wasn't told. But fun stuff. Okay, fun stuff. So you bought something not from CES, but something Sven mentioned.
Yeah, so our friend Sven Johansson, who was on last week, mentioned the Griffin Power Bank, which is a portable Apple Watch charger that apparently Griffin does not want anyone to know exists because they sold it in 2017 and then yanked it from the market. And I had bought a portable Apple Watch charger about, I guess, a year ago, didn't really work for me. It was the kind of thing you put your phone, your watch on it, and it would actually drain your watch instead of charging your watch. So I guess it was a reverse watch charger.
Yeah, that doesn't sound too useful.
So I did not. I kind of wanted one, even though I very rarely, my watch is, not powered. But so I found one on eBay for under $30. I think it was $29, which was probably about what it was when it came out, oddly enough. And I got it yesterday. I charged it up. And since we have started recording the podcast about 30 minutes ago, I have had my watch sitting on it. We started at 96%, and my watch is at 99% now. So I can confirm it is at least charging my watch.
Right. It's a slow charger, but it's...
Yeah, it's not very fast, but it will work.
Yeah.
It also comes with a little stand sort of attachment, which I think is kind of unique. So you can, I'm trying to get it to fit while my watch is still on it so I can show Todd what this looks like.
Yep.
But the idea is your watch can actually stand upright and sit on your desk, and you can at least use the time display as you tap on it. So it's sort of a nice little thing, and I do believe it will work as a charger even without the battery functionality used. And most importantly, the cable that it connects to the world in is micro USB. So if you are traveling and you've got a bunch of micro USB stuff and not a lot of lightning stuff, you don't have to worry about proprietary cord or anything like that. It's just a regular micro to USB-A adapter.
I got to tell you something funny, speaking of micro USB adapters. So I was at a one-day seminar the other day, last week, and I think one of my batteries, it wasn't low, but it was kind of giving a hint it might be low by the afternoon. So it needed a, what the heck was it now? I don't remember. But whatever it was, it had a micro USB adapter. And I thought, oh, I've got all kinds of cables in my bag. I'll just grab a cable and, have it out just in case I need to charge it up with a little portable battery. Well, I had a USB-C, I had a Lightning, I had no micro USB in my my go bag. Because apparently I don't have anything that uses it except that one thing I was trying to charge, whatever it was. And it was like, hey, where is it? You know? So I have to go find a micro USB. Anyway, it has become what used to be ubiquitous in my go bag is now not even there, and apparently hasn't been there for months. So
that's just interesting to think about from a perspective of what we think of will always live in our bags versus what we don't think of. I always thought that I would have a laptop that I would take with me to work every day, and now I don't do that. I just have a tablet, and always thought that, well, always have a collection of cords. And in fact, if you remember, do you remember the Rode Wired Mega Media Bag?
What? Yes.
It was, a giant monstrosity of things you could carry stuff in, and I still have two of them because they're just so epically large of a bag. And that was what we kind of thought 15 years ago you would still have to carry every day, because it has pockets for everything under the sun. It can carry a full-size laptop. It can carry a bunch of files. It can carry books. And
I have one with wheels. You know,
yeah, I've got that one too. I keep all my camera equipment in it.
Yeah,
because it's big enough that it suits that use quite well. But it's just crazy to think where we've come, and now the fact that on a daily basis, my sweatshirt from Scotty Vest carries everything I need. And there are some days I don't even take the iPad out if I'm not, you know, bouncing between meetings. I might just be on my laptops at my desks.
Yeah. Which reminds me, you know, I know some of our friends who occasionally listen to our podcast are friends with Scott Jordan, Scotty Vest. And could you complain to him on my behalf that I really need warmer weather clothing with more pockets? So, you know, the polo, which is awesome, the Scotty Vest polo, I've got three of them. It's only got one. Well, it's got two pockets, but the second one is useless. And the what did it call? It's called Cabana. It's a short sleeve shirt. It's not a polo. It's a button up shirt. It's the only thing that has exposed pockets large enough for a large iPhone or large Android phone, which is awesome. But again, it's got two breast pockets, which is awesome, and each breast pocket has two pockets, one for short things and one for long things like a iPhone 10. But it needs more pockets. I'm just saying, I need like a pocket for an iPad mini or something, like, you know, like the vests and not the vest, but the hoodie and the regular jackets do. We need more pockets. And the other reason this is super important, and this is, and people in the mainland and other places in the country or world might not know, Aloha shirts, which, you know, I think everybody knows an Aloha shirt looks like. It's a very flowery print, which is common business wear every day in Hawaii. And it's not for special occasions. You just wear it Monday through Friday as you know, like other people wear a shirt and tie. For some reason, I've mentioned this before, Aloha shirt designers make really tiny pockets that really don't fit a phone well. So, anyway, so two things. So, Scott Jordan, hopefully somebody will talk to you on our behalf or my behalf about the need for warm weather clothing with more pockets. And a lot of shirt makers, we guys need bigger pockets. I'm just saying. These phones are not going to carry themselves, you know. All right, that's my rant for today, I guess. Pockets, or the lack of them. Okay, and you've got one more thing on it. We've got kind of a short one today, but anyway.
My last item is that, you know, there are certain technologies out there that you think are supposed to make your life much easier, and then you keep battling with them for 3 hours. What is wrong with this picture? I had what I considered a very simple scenario.
Okay.
I have an appointment system that people can book appointments with me.
Okay.
And they get added to my calendar with a very specific prefix on them, so I can find them quite easily in my appointment book and all that, or in my calendar. And I thought, you know, a lot of times people don't know where they're meeting with me, because I have two offices, and the people I'm working with, aka college students, aren't usually that familiar with Outlook items. You know, they don't, meeting requests just sort of don't exist to them. So I thought, well, can't I just do an automated thing in Microsoft Flow where it would find these things on my calendar and send out an email the night before just saying, hey, remember, you've got a meeting at this time in this place.
Yeah.
Not that I think this is going to help me much, but, you know, you never know.
At least it's
so. I've been playing with this all morning, trying to get, you know, look for specific things on my calendar. These two time frames, you know, less than 24 hours, but, you know, not before the beginning of the time that it's running. Right. And also find this prefix. And it's just been an interesting experience to see how Microsoft Flow has various items, various tools. So there's a get items for, or get events plugin, but yet the get events plugin was not working as well as the get calendar view of events, which you would think would not be as useful to you. So I've just been kind of messing around with these things all day. I think I'm finally making headway with it, but something, it's just ironic that you have a tool that's supposed to make your life easier by doing things faster, and you spend much more time trying to get it to tell you what you want it to tell you.
Why do you think that is? Is it because it has a bazillion options in the language? Is it like, I assume it's like, I have never used Microsoft Flow. I assume it's like a scripting language or something?
Yeah, it's basically a drag and drop module sort of thing.
Okay.
And I do think it is because it has a million options. I think it's also because they're not very well categorized.
Yeah.
So there are some examples, and if you want to use one of their examples, then you're good. But if you don't, if you just want to try to wing it, sometimes you get something useful, sometimes you do not. So I think that's sort of what you run into the problem with.
Yeah, Microsoft Excel functions are kind of like that too, where there's sometimes there's, you know, there seems like there are five or six ways to skin a cat, but, you know, four of them do a really poor job or not the way you thought they should work. And the one you thought was supposed to do what you want to do doesn't, and it's really something else. Yeah, I see that a lot.
This is reminding me a lot of the issues of index match versus VLOOKUP in Excel.
Yeah.
Where both will do pretty much the same thing. There are very niche scenarios where you want to use one over the other, and yet people will argue that you only use one or the other.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. Many ways to skin the cat. Some result in the cat being better skinned than others.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's too bad because, you know, as you were saying that, I was thinking in a simpler world, and I know you can't do it this way. In a simple world, this is a grep and awk problem.
You know, that is exactly it. In fact, I was originally going to write this in Python because there's an Office 365 library, and then someone said, oh, Flow can do that. And I thought, well, that'll be faster.
Yeah.
And now I'm not so sure if it would be faster. Maybe. I just finally, as we're talking, got my first successful test. So at least, you know, after 3 hours, it's working.
You know, I thought, you know, and as we close, I think, now that you mentioned Python, I thought I saw, was it Visual Studio or something just introduced some additional Python support to it? Anyway, I'll go look it up later. But, yeah. Interesting, you know, and I should note before I close, two things before I close. One is last week, I think I mentioned in the podcast, I bought this keyboard cleaner, like a gel putty keyboard cleaner called Color Coral. Sorry, it's hard to say. Color Coral. It was about $8 or $9. And it looks kind of like a kid's toy, you know, like a kid's putty, gelatinous putty toy. But boy, it does a good job on a keyboard. I thought it might get stuck in the cracks or something, but nope, it does exactly what it says you would do. And I've done it on a couple of keyboards in the office, and now I'm going to order one for home. I give it a recommended, thumbs up recommendation. And it's reasonably priced. It lasts for 2 years. It has a little manufacturer date stamp on the bottom of the bottle, so you know how old it is as time progresses. It's not an expiration date. It's when it was made, so... you know, it's a little bit different from other, like, food expiration dates. It's the opposite in terms of the date stamp. But, you know, this is when it was made, and 2 years after that, you should go get a new one. Anyway, Color Coral. Turns out there's a whole bunch of these gelatinous cleaning materials that I never knew about. There's also one made for cleaning your car. You know, like the air conditioning heater air vents in your car? They get dust, and it's kind of hard to clean out. Anyway, useful stuff. I'm going to buy some more of it. And let's see. The second thing is, oh yeah, I just wanted to mention, I have not played, and this is very disappointing, I have not played with my CrowPi, you know, my Raspberry Pi on steroids. But I have been reading a lot about it in preparation to play with it. I've been reading a lot about how the GPIOs are connected and things like that. So just the reading part has been fun. Looking forward to playing a bit more with that and maybe talking to John about some other stuff. Anyway, we managed to use up about a half an hour, not including the little glitch on my side. So we will talk to you next time.